Hello and welcome to the Waterways Ireland podcast series with me, Turtle Bunbury. In this series, we are exploring the rich history of Ireland's waterways from the beginning of recorded time to the present day. Right, we are making progress. In this series alone, we've witnessed the arrival of those terrifying Vikings onto the Irish river system. We've seen how Turlough O'Connor, the King of Connacht, turned his mastery of the Shannon into shaping one of the strongest kingdoms in pre-Norman Ireland. And we have watched how those French-speaking Norman warriors galloped onto Irish shores and began taking over the country by building those formidable castles along the banks of the Barrow and Loch Derg and the River Shannon, and so on. And that was kind of part of the early phase of the conquest of Ireland by England. Now, in this episode, I'm going to home in on one of the indigenous Irish families that tried to push back against this subjugation, namely the Maguire kings of Fermanagh, Fermanagh, as they might say up there. In the 1580s, Ireland was turned upside down when the Tudor army of Queen Elizabeth seized control of Munster, while the Queen's administrators and lawyers tricked the chieftains of Connacht into surrendering that part of the world. In the northwest of Ireland, a long overdue alliance was forged between the O'Neills, the O'Donnells, and a family who had held sway over Lough Erne for over 300 years. It was to be the last hurrah for Gaelic Ireland and the Maguire princes of Fermanagh. Let us start in the town of Lisnaskey, just to the east of Upper Lough Erne. Lisnaskey, it's the second biggest town in County Fermanagh after Enniskillen. In a quiet field just above that town stands an ancient mound. It's almost certainly a Neolithic burial tomb. It is known locally as the Moat Ring, or Skia Gaura in Irish. Sometimes it's described as the Hill of Cornishee. In any case, this ancient mound is a spectacularly symbolic piece of earth. It is the place where 15 men were crowned as kings of Fermanagh in the medieval period. All 15 of those men belonged to the Maguire family, once among the three most prominent dynasties in the northwest of Ireland. At their peak, they utterly dominated the waterways in and around Lough Erne, and they were quite a remarkable clan in many ways, so I think they deserve our attention for a while. By the standards of most Irish kings, and indeed of many European kings, the Maguires enjoyed an incredibly serene track record. Their reigns averaged over two decades each, which is, you know, pretty sensational stuff. Some of them notched up over 40 years on the throne. And while challengers were pretty rare, only one of the 15 was assassinated. And as I say, that's a remarkable track record by the medieval standards. Occasionally, the Maguires were obliged to muscle up and defend themselves against rivals, primarily the O'Neills and the O'Donnells, but there were other clans that threw a punch every now and then, or who the Maguires wished to dispossess. The O'Rourkes, the O'Reillys, the McGoverns, the McKiernans, the O'Hanlons, the McMahons. And there were also multiple branches of the Maguires themselves. So, for instance, the barony of Clanauly gets its name from Auli Maguire. He's a younger son of one of the kings who headed to the west side of the lake and seized the area from its previous occupants. Or Clan Kelly is likewise named for Donacha Ciala Maguire, who wrestled control of that area from the McMahons. Sometimes the Maguire kings needed to arm up to resolve an internal squabble against people like these, or maybe a nephew with ideas above his station, perhaps. And there was the occasional Maguire whose ambition was to invade neighbouring lands. However, in general, Lough Erne, under the Maguires, was a stable and prosperous place for nearly three centuries, with the throne passing without incident from father to son, and mostly to the eldest son. To my mind, the Maguires were an exceptionally progressive clan. Their households were replete with historians and poets and learned men, and they were also tremendous benefactors of the church, the Christian church, introducing new orders, endowing churches, and embarking on pilgrimages to Rome and Santiago de Compostela in Spain. In their twilight, many of them actually retired, or maybe abdicated is the right word, but they stepped down from their throne in good time to prepare for their own death. The Maguires came of age following the fall of the MacLachlan Kings of Alec in the 12th century, and that was a tough time for the area. In 1185, for instance, the King of Tyrconnell brought a fleet of English allies from his area into Lochearn via the Falls of Assaroe, and they plundered the surrounding lands and forced the inhabitants to submit. You might recall how in the episode about the Normans I spoke of Bishop de Grey, the guy who during the reign of King John built Motton Bailey castles at Clonus in County Monaghan and Beleek and Kailushka in County Fermanagh. Now, all three of those castles were destroyed by the indigenous Irish, but the Norman influence kind of prevailed, and by the late 14th century, the entire area was held, or claimed by, probably claimed by is a better word, by a guy called Richard de Burgh. He's the Red Earl of Ulster. He's the father-in-law of Robert the Bruce, if you know your Bannockburn. And in 1342, it is recorded that this guy, the Red Earl's grandson, another de Burgh, was receiving tribute of 80 cows from County Fermanagh. Who provided those 80 cows? Well, it was the Maguire family. They descend from Downmore Maguire. He's a warrior who actually witnessed those incursions by the Anglo-Norman authorities in Dublin and who lived to see all three of those castles fall. In the year of our Lord, 1264, his son, Down Corra Maguire, was the first of the line to be crowned King of Fermanagh. He is hailed by the bards as Ireland's most generous lord. He lived at Lisnaskee and he reigned for 42 years until 1301, when, as the annals of Ulster record, he rested in Christ. Down Corra's descendants continued to expand the Maguire territory, albeit as a subservient family to the O'Donnell of Tyrconnell, who was, for the most part, subservient to the O'Neill of Tyrone. The most fearsomely named Maguire king was Philip of the Battleaxe. He reigned from 1363 to 1395, that's 32 years, and he earned his moniker by fending off attacks by the rival MacMahon and O'Neill and O'Connor chieftains in a series of gruesome battles. County Fermanagh essentially took on its present shape and size on his watch because it was Philip of the Battleaxe who established it as a kind of buffer kingdom or sub-kingdom between the warring realms of Ulster and Connacht. Now, Philip's greatest asset was a fleet of white sailboats that he had on Lochearn. That gave him mastery of the waters, and other waters too. At one point, his fleet sailed into the waters of Loch Outer in County Cavan, and he captured the O'Reilly chief, who subsequently became his foremost ally. Indeed, the Maguires notched up a rake of naval victories over their rivals in the 14th and 15th centuries. A fleet to be proud of. Well, if you've got a fleet you're proud of, where are you going to put your castle? Right beside it. At least that's what Philip the Battleaxe's son did. Philip the Battleaxe's son had a much friendlier name. He was called Hugh the Hospitable. And it was Hugh the Hospitable who built the original castle at Enniskillen. There's a lovely poetic description of it in the Book of O'Connor Don from the year 1480 that goes like this. When one comes to its threshold, one sees a herb garden and ships, and there is only a fence between them, a strip of lake by the side of the house, a green clearing in front of it, the reflection of its purple outlines, a borrowed beauty in the lake. Fairy tale stuff. That's the earliest description of Enniskillen, I think. But it was strategically a rock-solid spot to build a castle because it's on an island between the upper and lower Lochearn. And that allowed the Maguires to control the passage of all ships to and froing between those two lakes, and to keep an eye on the way that goods were being distributed to the surrounding areas. Hugh, or Cuey, they sometimes call Hugh Q up in County Fermanagh and Monaghan, Q the Hospitable. He also built the castle at Monet, which is just west of the Lochearn Resort, if you know the area. And as a king, Hugh was widely applauded for his virtue and munificence. Once a year, he would seat himself beneath a white thorn tree at Monet at sunrise, from where he would receive his extended family and neighbours, listening to their woes, dispensing wise counsel, and handing out dowries to girls whose fathers were in financial difficulty. Hugh and his fellow Maguire kings were also patrons of many other families during this period. They had three hereditary families of poets, the O'Feeloin, which would become the Phelan family, the O'Hoasa, which became the Hussies, and the MacRiartys. There were also two families of historians, the O'Keenoins, as in Keenan, and the O'Lineens, which is generally taken to be the Lineen or Lennon families. Their hereditary lawyers were the O'Breslins, and their hereditary physicians were the O'Cassidys of Coole on the eastern shore of the Upper Loch. I mentioned that they liked to go on pilgrimage every now and then. Well, Hugh the Hospitable was a frequent pilgrim to Italy, to primarily Rome, as well as Spain. And he was actually returning from the Holy Land, from Jerusalem, when he died in Kinsale, County Cork, in 1428. Hugh's successor, Thomas Oge Maguire, or Thomas the Younger, was considerably less pious. He once decorated his garden with the heads of 16 O'Rourke nobles, whom his men had slain during a raid on their strongholds in County Cavan. That said, a 15th century poem to Thomas Oge records, "A forest of masts is on the urn. It makes one start with joy to see them." Indeed, the annals actually record how Thomas Oge Maguire collected his tributes from the districts north of Loch Earn, and then he embarked in one of the vessels of his fleet and sailed up to Galloon, where he kept a house of general hospitality for a month while collecting the tributes of the southern districts. That's Galloon on Lower Loch Earn. Now, I'm not going to go into the detail here, but in case you are a Maguire, you should know that two branches of the family evolved at this time. The senior branch descend from Thomas Oge, who liked to have human heads in his garden, and they became known as the Lisnaski branch. Then the descendants of his brother, Philip, became the junior or Enniskillen branch. As I say, we're not going to go into this, but these two branches did become quite bitter rivals over the course of time. Indeed, it was in 1537 that the 10-year reign of Cú Chonaght, the 11th Maguire prince, ended when he was murdered on the island of Crahan in Loch Earn. He was the only Maguire prince to be assassinated, initially buried on Devonish Island. His remains were later removed to Donegal Abbey. So, by 1500, the Maguire family owned almost all of the present county of Fermanagh and manned all the principal positions, the bishops, the archdeacons, the priors, the parish priests, they're all Maguires, and most of the other families in the area kowtowed to them. Now, the Maguires were still not as important as the O'Neills and the O'Donnells in the northwest, and in truth, they never would be. But they knew roughly which side of their bread was buttered on, and so the Maguires' loyalty swung between the O'Neills and the O'Donnell families as those two warring dynasties vied for supreme power in northwest Ireland. These political disputes between the Maguires and the O'Neills and the O'Donnells and so on were all quite self-contained for a long time, but in the late 16th century, everything would be completely flipped on its head by the arrival of a new force in the region, namely the Tudor army of Queen Elizabeth. This coincided with the reign of Cú Chonaght II, one of the most scholarly Maguire chiefs. He actually acceded to a request to surrender his lands to the Queen in 1585. He received them back without its church lands. That was the deal, and maybe he thought it was fair enough. Anyway, when the Tudor administration in Dublin then formally shired Fermanagh the following year, made it County Fermanagh, Cú Chonaght must have known the end was kind of nigh. And you definitely get that sense that the O'Neills and the O'Donnells and the Maguire are all thinking, uh-oh, what's coming down the track? The Tudors had already seized most of Munster, and in 1585, the year that Cú Chonaght surrenders his lands, that's the year that the Tudors effectively took control of Connacht, So almost all of Ireland, or a huge chunk of Ireland, was now under the control of Queen Elizabeth's forces in Dublin, bar certain pockets of Ulster. Now, the Maguire land was no easy target. The terrain, it's a warren of forests and hills and drumlins and islands and lakes and rivers and so on. And the Maguires knew every inch of it inside out. 300 years of stability had also made it a kind of a private paradise, not least Enniskillen with its glistening bays and melodious falls, as described by the 16th century Connacht poet Tadhg Dáil O'Higgean. In fact, he writes, "Enniskillen with its glistening bays and melodious falls." That's the opening line of a 40-line poem called Enniskillen that he penned in the 1580s. And he goes on to describe, "The strand beside the court, on the fairy-like bay of murmuring streams, was crowded with such groves of tapering shipmasts that they concealed the beach and its waves." He makes it sound a little like a 21st century yacht club. Indeed, if you should be on Devonish Island, go to St. Molochy's Church, where the Maguire is sponsored, and you'll see what looks like the prow of a sailing ship incorporated into their crest. Or on a lichen-encrusted Maguire gravestone on the island, you can still just about make out the shape of a ship with sloped masts. A spirit sail rig, perhaps, as in a four-sided fore-and-aft sail. Certainly, this spirit sail would have been a common sight on Lough Erne in the medieval period, right through until the invention of the outboard motor. Tadhg Dáil O'Higgean, the poet I referenced earlier, he also remarks on a company of artificers binding vessels at Enniskillen, which sounds like a team of boat builders at work, planking up new boats and making the vital tools, the oars, the spars, the sails, and so on. Well, you're going to need boat builders if you want to build boats, so that adds up. I have read that the Maguire chieftains had 1,500 boats patrolling their lakes and waterways. That seems like an exaggeration, but maybe not. Now, I mentioned Cuchonacht II. It actually fell to his son and heir, A, or Hugh Maguire, as he's generally known, to defend their ancestral kingdom. In 1589, this fearless young man stepped down from that coronation stone at Lisnaskey as the 15th Maguire chief of Fermanagh. He kind of realised that his late father's conciliatory attitude to the Tudors was a ticket to nowhere. Loyalty to the crown, I mean, basically it counted for very little. The teenage Red Hugh O'Donnell, for instance, his father had been a loyal supporter of the crown and was then banged up in Dublin Castle for 4 years. Or what about Hugh Ruadh MacMahon, whose friendship with the Tudors ended when they hanged him outside his own front door? Initially, Hugh Maguire played the game. He accepted a knighthood in Christchurch Cathedral in 1591, and then things changed. The following year, he helped Red Hugh, who was his cousin, he helped Red Hugh to break out of Dublin Castle, because both men now realised that the Tudors posed an existential threat to their world. They gradually persuaded the region's most powerful noble, that's Hugh O'Neill, the Earl of Tyrone, to come on board, and even though Hugh O'Neill had been raised in Queen Elizabeth's court, so you suddenly have this alliance of the three big families together, the O'Donnell, the O'Neill, and the Maguire. This is the time of the 9 Years' War, and Ulster became a battleground between the warring armies of essentially Protestant England and Catholic Ireland. Initially, Hugh Maguire and his allies managed to push the English out of Fermanagh, but reinforcements returned. They captured Enniskillen and Lisnaskey, and then the Tudors start installing a string of garrisons from Newry all the way to Ballyshannon, including at Monaghan, Benburb, and Lisnaskey. There was considerable fighting along the shores of the River Erne at this time, including a battle near Beleek, in which Maguire's men suffered great slaughter. The Irish enjoyed some successes, some exceptional ones too, not least the O'Neill's great victory at the Battle of the Yellow Ford, which gave him complete power in Ulster in 1598. However, when their armies moved south, the campaign began to flounder. In 1600, Hugh Maguire led his men as far south as Cork. This is just before the big Battle of Kinsale. and he made a dumb decision. He rashly decided to raid an English camp, and he completely underestimated his opponents. They overwhelmed he and his force. 32 Maguires were killed, including Hugh Maguire. He was buried alongside his ancestor and namesake, Hugh the Hospitable, the guy who founded Enniskillen, who had been buried in Cork 172 years earlier. That loss, the loss of Hugh Maguire, was an enormous blow to the Gaelic alliance, not least when a power struggle among his heirs saw one claimant form a treacherous pact with the Tudors that paved the way for English conquest of County Fermanagh. And that came just as O'Neill and O'Donnell saw their dreams shattered by that absolute English victory over their combined forces at Kinsale. Hugh Maguire's brother, another Cuchonacht, Cuchonacht Óg, is considered the last Maguire king of Fermanagh, although he was never actually crowned. He returns from the defeat at Kinsale to find his lands absolutely devastated by the English conquerors. By 1605, over half of his estate has been seized and parcelled out to planters. The following year, he purchases a vessel in Rouen, in France, and he dolls it up as an innocuous fishing boat, sails it back from Dunkirk to Loch Swilly in County Donegal, and in 1607, one day, approximately 100 passengers boarded Cuchonacht Maguire's ship at Rathmullen. The ship duly sailed from France with the cream of Ireland's Gaelic nobility on board. That's the event that we know as the Flight of the Earls. Perhaps the Maguires were wise not to stay and fight. In 1607, so the same time as the Flight of the Earls, Sir John Davies, he's the Attorney General of Ireland, he comes up to County Fermanagh, he tours the area, and he makes this observation in his journal. "Generally, the natives of this country are reputed the worst swordsmen in the north, being rather inclined to be scholars or husbandmen than to be cairn or men of action." As mentioned, there was indeed an unusually large number of hereditary learned families in County Fermanagh, bards, historians, harpers, master craftsmen, and so forth. I think it's interesting that Cuchonacht Óg Maguire was buying Breton ships in Rouen and indeed sailing back and forth to France. I think it again underlines the notion that the Maguires of Loch Earn had these long-standing trade links with Europe and indeed those pilgrims heading off to the Holy Land and Spain and Italy and so on. Just to wrap up there, poor old Cuchonacht Óg, his plan was to bring the exiles to Spain, which was another part of the world they traded with, but contrary winds put paid to that, and so instead they pulled into the coast of Normandy, from where most of his passengers went overland to Rome to meet the Pope. Cuchonacht was among those who reached Rome, but he was a kind of restless soul, and he was determined. He wanted to convince the Spanish king to send a new armada to Ireland. So in 1608, he joined forces with James McMahon, and they boarded a ship in Naples that was bound for Spain. And alas, both men became violently ill on board with fever. It was said to be poison, but I think fever is accepted nowadays. And they both died. They were buried in a Franciscan monastery near Genoa. And so with the death of Cuchonacht Óg Maguire, the remaining Maguire lands in Ireland were vested in his kinsman Brian, who was created Baron Maguire of Enniskillen in 1627. Brian actually sponsored the celebrated Annals of the Four Masters, which we've referenced a few times in this series. But poor old Brian Maguire, his sons were also fated for a sticky end. His son Conor, the second Baron, was hung, drawn and quartered in London for high treason after the Irish Rebellion in 1641, while his brother, Colonel Rory Maguire, was killed in a skirmish in 1648. For those who know the area, it was Rory who destroyed Tully Castle by Derrygonnelly, the ruins of which still stand on the southern shores of Lower Loch Earn. Over the course of the next century, the titular Barons Maguire of Enniskillen actually served in the Jacobite and French armies, with the very last one serving as a captain in the Comte de Lally's Regiment of Irish Infantry. While I think of it, it would be remiss of me not to mention one Patrick Maguire, Esquire, whom, according to local lore, not only sailed the ocean blue with Christopher Columbus, but he was also the first fella to set foot in the Americas in 1492. Well, of course, there are still plenty of Maguires hither and yon, and a fine clan they are too. But there you have it, the rise and fall of a remarkable dynasty who ruled the Erne for several hundred years. Thanks for listening. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Waterways Through Time. You'll find more episodes on waterwaysireland.org or on Alexa, Spotify, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll find my archive of historical stories, mostly Irish, at turtlebunbury.com. My sincere thanks to series producer Ali Bunbury and technical producer Mary Burke.